Well, hello.
Ah, buenos dias. It's been so long since we spoke.
You're in Mexico.
Yes.
What's the weather like?
Well, it's probably warm, I'm going to say. Possibly hot.
Oh, you're not actually in Mexico, are you? You're in Worthing still.
No, we've just recorded a podcast, haven't we?
Pre-recorded it. Let's just get on with it.
Okay.
Welcome, everybody, to episode... See, I don't even know what episode it is. 323, I think it will be.
Yeah, I think it will be.
323 of the Midfaith Crisis podcast. My name's Nick Page. And Joe, as this goes out, but not as it's been recorded, is in Mexico.
It's true. It is true. Yes, I am. Mm. How blessed I am. So that's a wonderful thing.
So I hope you're having a wonderful time and scuba diving and communing with octopi or whatever it is you do out there and... spotting brightly coloured birds and wearing brightly coloured shirts.
Yes, to all of those things. Maybe more snorkelling than scuba diving, but yes, thank you.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that, yeah. Do you not do the scuba? Have you never tried
that? I have done scuba diving, but you don't really need to. I mean, if you want to go right out on the coral, but there's coral reefs to snorkel around, so that does me. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, well...
I'll tell you all about it in the next episode. I mean, obviously, I could tell you about it now, but I'll wait.
Okay, no, that's good. So, listen, we're going to have an interview now that Joe has pre-recorded. And I'm going to use the term recorded loosely.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
So, there are a few technical issues with this. I don't know quite what was happening. But so we do hope you can stay with it. I think it's such a good interview, such an interesting subject, and such an important subject.
Yes.
That it's really worth sticking with it, I think.
I think so. So you're about to hear an interview with the fabulous Becca Legg. Although I did call her Rebecca, I noticed, even though she's never really known as Rebecca. She's just Becca. Anyway,
okay.
For reasons I don't fully understand. But what's great is that she was married to Steve Legg, and that was great, but sadly Steve passed 6 months ago. So as well as talking about her amazing work with an organization called Restored, I thought I'd also take the opportunity to talk a little bit about grief with her, and that was really helpful as well. Well, I'm delighted to welcome to the podcast today Rebecca Legg. Becca, welcome to the Midfaith Crisis podcast.
I was about to say welcome back, but that's not how you respond to it. Thank you. It's very lovely to be here. Welcome you.
It is so nice to at last be talking to you. We have all these mutual friends because the elephant in the room, which we're just clear now, is we're both ministers just along the road from my house at Maybridge.
Yeah, we were.
But that's not what we're here to talk about. We're going to talk about the amazing work you do raising awareness for domestic abuse. But before we come to all that, the other thing we want to talk about is your beloved late husband, Steve Legg, who is known to myself and to Nick Page because he actually came on the show we did at Spring Harvest many, many years ago and performed, you know, as he did absolutely amazingly. I mean, both of us loved him and we love his shirts.
Someone had to.
But where should we go with it? Let's start by talking about you first, Becca Legg. For those people who've never heard of you,
which is many,
well, you'd be surprised. And I was just joking with you before we started recording that someone wrote into me today and said, "You really must get someone from Restored on the podcast." And I was able to say, interviewing them this afternoon, which is very cool.
Very satisfying.
It is. But for those that don't and perhaps haven't heard of you, tell us a bit about yourself.
So I am a nearly 50-year-old woman, very nearly, but still like clinging on to my 40s with my fingertips. Who is a mum, who has been a wife, and who leads this organisation called Restored, which works to support survivors of domestic abuse and equip the church to be better at doing that. And we'll get to that later on, I know. Mm. I've had this kind of wiggly career path. I'm doing some leadership training at the moment, and it's full of these people who've known since they left school that they wanted to lead a charity. And I'm like, oh no, I just fell into it. I just kind of... Bimble, I like to say with God's leading, bimble with God's leading from one job into another. So I started as a teacher. I've worked as an office manager. I've gone to schools doing sexual health and relationships lessons. I worked for the organisation Compassion. I've been a minister at a church. I've done all kinds of things and landed where I am, which I think probably was God's great master plan that I couldn't see coming. But yeah, that's me.
Well, that's succinct. I mean, we could spend an hour there, couldn't we? That's an amazing well, journey, to use an overused word, but that's extraordinary. So yeah, let's talk a little bit about Steve, because I'm very conscious that you're still well within a kind of grieving period. I saw on your Facebook page, it was Valentine's Day the other day, and you put a post up which was very moving. And I just wondered how, whether grief has changed your perspective a little bit on life, on faith, just how that is sitting with you at this stage.
I think this whole process has, because, and I think one of the things I've become really aware of with grief, or it's not aware of, I'm thinking about it, it's made me think, is people's experience is totally different. I've got a friend who lost their partner in an instant. They didn't expect it, and that's one type of loss. And I had nearly 3 years of slowly losing my husband and going through, just all the complexities and challenges and fears and anxieties of, loving somebody who has cancer that's going to take them. And so you kind of pre-grieve and then you grieve differently when the time comes. And so I think that whole process has impacted me. It's challenged my faith, it's challenged me as a person, it's shaped our family, it's had such a huge impact all over. But kind of like different stages of it have had different impacts, I think. I think something that happened really early on was, I haven't been a minister in a church for 5 years, but within that space, I've ended up still teaching and preaching at various points. And I felt like God had me on this journey where every time I was asked to speak, it was on something to do with God's unshakable kingdom in some shape or form. And it was like God forcing me on this learning journey of remember, just remember who I am, remember where your foundations are built. And I think the first time I had to speak on it was, I can't get it right now, but it's somewhere in Hebrews. It's the bit after, where you look at all the heroes of faith, and there's a piece that comes after, and it says the world, essentially everything will shake. God will shake everything, but there's something that remains unshakable. And I have dug into that, and it's really challenged me to think through. What does that actually mean, though? We're really good at saying my faith is in Jesus, and this is a, but and it's really easy to say, but what does it actually mean? And what does it look like to practice that and to grow it and make it real and not just something that you give lip service to? And the truth is, for most of my life and probably still, a lot of my security, stability, everything lies in, knowing that I've got a roof over my head and some people around me who and and a job and a bank balance that is black, not red. And then when something that you put, so much of my life has been based on the security of my marriage, to have that, like watch that being taken away and realize it's going to go, challenged me to think, yeah, my security isn't just in Jesus, it's been in all these other things. So how do I really lay my foundations there? How do I do it? So that's been a real learning for me.
Sure. I want to ask you a couple of questions. Let's start with the sort of slightly more negative one. I wonder what people were saying to you through that period leading up to Steve's death that didn't help you. And then we come to, and what are the things that did help?
Well, it didn't tell me when everyone would tell me that he was going to get healed, because I just sat and I thought, well, God hasn't told me that. I'm not entirely sure he's told you. I think you're just saying what we all would like to be true. And so I mostly ignored that. I'm just trying to think now off the top of my head, but there were so many things that aren't empathetic as well. And the joy of the Lord is your strength. Like, okay, but what does that mean? You have all these
Thanks for that.
things. What does it actually mean? And well, God will make you stronger through this. And you think, well, I hope so, but at the moment, that's not really making me feel better. So this is me being super negative now. lot of people were also wonderful, and most of those people meant well.
Yeah.
And
Yes, of course.
but there's a lot of pithy things to say that actually don't mean very much and aren't terribly helpful in the middle of all of that.
I wonder what you would say to people who are perhaps listening to podcasts who are supporting someone living with terminal cancer at the moment. What would you say are some of the things that they could do that would be really helpful for that person?
Yeah, I have got lots on that one, and because I think one is to be led by the person, and often they don't know how to lead you, so that is, that is challenging. I'm aware of it, but I think one is, I think one of the most helpful things is when somebody acknowledges that it's hard, especially if you're the person going alongside the person who is ill, because there's so much focus on how are they, and are they, there's a lot of focus on the person, and that's okay. I'm really glad to lots of focus. But the few times that somebody went back, this must be really hard for you too. Are you okay? Like, it would floor me every time because it didn't happen very often. And so when, and I can remember really early on, actually, there was one of our friends who, and he and his wife have just been brilliant throughout. But he said, we'd been chatting. It was just after we found out. And just when Steve was off doing something, he went, but how are you, Becca? And I went, oh, thank you. Thank you for noticing me. And actually, I didn't need him to have answers and I didn't need him to have anything clever to say. But being able to say, just occasionally say, you're carrying a lot, I see that. Sometimes that's all you need is that recognition that it's hard for you too. And even without it needing to be dramatic, just a little word, that's helpful. And then there was another time when I was working with one of the trustees of my organisation, actually looking at a policy doc, something deeply dull, and it was in the weeks after. So Steve died in September 2024, but in April 2023, and the dates do matter, April 2023, he was told for the first time that he had 5 months ish to live. It was in the weeks after that I was working, doing some work, with this person who sat me down in this, Zoom meeting and said, "So, Becca, how are you?" So here's the difference. She was asking how I was, and then I said, "Oh, I'm okay, but let's look at this thing." And she said, "No, Becca, it's really important that you know how to be vulnerable. Really important that you know how to say how you are." And I said, "Oh, I do, but I don't want to do it now. I want to focus on it. Like, let's just get on with this doc." And she just kept pushing.
No,
It's like,
really.
by the end, it's like, and I was lost because actually for me, I was working, I wasn't working full capacity, I was taking time off to be with Steve, but he was working. But work was a really good distraction. It was good to get stuck in, and I felt like I was being forced back into my sad world at a time when I didn't escape, don't spoil it. And afterwards I was chatting with one of my colleagues who and I just said what had happened, and she said, "People just need to ask you back what you want." So I was like, "Yes." And I said, and so we came up with this list, and we said, and we, because we thought, oh, this would be good with survivors of domestic abuse as well. And they don't want to talk about it all the time. But so my friends have got, we've got this thing now, right? Becca, what do you want? Do you want to unload? Do you want to cry on me? Do you need a hug? Or do you want me to make you laugh? Do you want me to tell you about my problems so you can forget? You can just get lost in mine for a little while. Or should we just go shopping?
That's so
Or
good.
sit and watch something funny on telly. And I think sometimes you need to give people options because their brain can't even think. But helping somebody, like, just know what they, help them to think through what they need in that moment, and just that be okay.
That's great.
That's
Without
fine.
being pushy.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's so great. Thank you. I mean, we can stop there. That was so helpful, but we're not going to stop there because I want you to tell us, well, how you got this latest job, why you got it, and why it's important to you. Why don't we start there? So tell us a little bit about how you came to be working with Restored and why that's important to you.
So it's kind of a two-pronged thing, really. And the one side of that prong is that Steve is my second husband, and my first husband, my first marriage, was abusive. I lived overseas, and it was a pretty horrible marriage that I escaped from 22 years ago, almost to the day, actually. And so it's part of my story. But part of my story was coming back to the UK and having a church who actually was wonderful with me, like theologically did not have a clue what to do with me, But they loved me. They knew they loved me, and they loved me really well. And at the time, they helped me to do up the house that I moved into. They helped me build flat pack furniture. There was one lady who bought me gifts every month with the housekeeping money. So, and I've still got, the salt and pepper pot and the set of mixing bowls that all stack into each other. And for a year, she bought me these gifts just to build my home. And they were so wonderful. They babysat when I had job interviews. They did so many things that I didn't take for granted, but I did on one level, because now I realize that I was so fortunate to be in that situation. So many people who do not get support, who don't get understood. I'm not even sure they understand, but they knew enough to know they wanted to help. But there's so many people who don't have that. And so that's part of my story. And the other is this kind of weird and wonderful career path that I went on. Well, as I look back, I can see God like weaving this tapestry of, unlikely career path into training up for the job, literally. So I've worked with charities, I've office managed, I've worked in the Violence Against Women and Girls sector, I've worked in church, I've done my master's in theology. I've done all of these bits that so that then when 5 years ago this job popped up, I thought, oh, that looks like, oh, maybe this is the thing. And at the time, didn't apply for it initially because of where I was within the church that I was in leading or co-leading. And we just had a massive change of leadership. I felt like I really should stay and help things. So it needed quite a lot of convincing that I should apply for it. So, which, in the end, I was convinced and I did. And then I got it. So, but those two things, and I just feel really passionately that the church is meant to be the light of the world. We follow a God who hates injustice, who hates violence, who hates all these things, and we should be a place of refuge and safety for people who are hurt and harmed and oppressed. And so if we can create those spaces in churches, I'm really passionate about church understanding this, and traditionally has not been brilliant. So yeah, I'm really passionate, and I feel like God has brought me to this place where I'm, picked up some of the skills I need, and it matters personally.
Well, I mean, so much there. I mean, I love the image of the church as a safe sanctuary. I think recovering that is great. Just to be clear, what was the job position you went for at Restored?
A CEO, which just felt scary because
I think it's
I
worth saying. Yes, well, it's lovely to have the Chief Executive Officer of Restored with us today. Thank you. So this is important for you because it's been a part of your story. How would you like to see churches changing, embracing this, understanding this? I guess I'm asking what the mission, I suppose, of Restored is a bit.
So, like, our mission, as you defined it on the website, is to speak up about violence against women and girls, to equip the church to stand against domestic abuse and to support survivors. And that speaking up is really important. And, I just think violence against women and girls is something that happens under the radar and nobody really talks. We're beginning to talk about it, but we don't talk about it anywhere near enough. And if you don't talk about it, you can't change it. And there's a story in the Book of Judges that I did my dissertation on. And it's Judges 19, and it's the story of the Levite and his concubine. And it's this particularly horrible story of violence against women and girls that never gets preached on. So I did my whole dissertation on how do you preach on Judges 19, in an age of Me Too. But it finishes with this verse where the people of God come together in literally holy outrage. It's this moment I liken it to the moment when George Floyd got murdered in America. And the thing you go, it wasn't the first time a black man got killed by the police. Like, but somehow his story grabbed everyone's attention, and somehow it kind of ignited this movement. And something similar happened like 3,000 years ago in Israel when this woman got, raped and murdered and then chopped up into pieces and posted through people's letterboxes. It's hideous. Because people came together and went, has such a thing ever been seen or done? We must speak up. We must do something. And there's this moment when God's people clock it and go, this is terrible. And I think that that message just comes down through the ages you know, and it's been ignored widely. But it matters that we speak up. It matters that we do something. It matters that we recognise where a whole section of society lives in threat of danger, that because of who they are, because they're women.
Yeah.
So it matters. And I forgot what the question was because I went off on my little hobby horse.
Oh, no, you're answering the question. I'm going to ask you another. I'll ask you loads of questions. The ones I told you I'd ask you, and probably a whole lot more, just
that's
to be
fine.
Clear. But I mean, firstly, I mean, just to be clear, is this an issue? Like, what are the stats about domestic abuse at the moment? And do you think it happens in the church?
Well, yes. So 1 in 4 women, 1 in 6 men will be subjected to domestic abuse in their lifetime. And the stats are the same.
1 in 4. I just want to let that sink in for a minute. Yeah. 1 in 4. Okay.
1 in 4. And the same as in the church. 1 in 4 churchgoers will experience domestic abuse.
Oof. Yeah.
But we don't think that's true.
Yeah. Okay. You know, yeah.
And only 1 in 7 churchgoers thinks their church knows what to do if they find out about it, if someone discloses it. So there's a real disconnect between reality and perceived reality. People are aware of it being a problem in the community, but they don't think it's a problem in their church community. Yeah. And that leads to silencing, because if we are in a, you know, in an environment where it's never talked about, or it's only talked about as a problem outside, then it's really hard to speak up and say, well, actually, can I just tell you what's happening in my house, what's happening in my marriage? I had this extraordinary moment. It was, you know, probably about 6-7 years ago, and we were doing a sermon series working through the book of Corinthians, and we'd got to the chapter on divorce, and my colleague said, so Rebecca, do you want to do that one? I was like, no, not really. But in the end, we did it as we did it as an interview, and Matt said, why don't we do this? I'd like you to tell some of your story, and it will help us to, you know, do this. People know my story. People knew I was married for the second time. I think they, like, I was never a secret that there was domestic abuse in my previous marriage. But we told some of it, not all the gory details, nothing like that. It was just came out. And at the end did that, you know, a bit like you see on the end of the BBC, if this has affected you, please do contact us.
Yeah.
That week, 5 women messaged me and to go out for coffee. And 2 of them I might have guessed, but the other 3 absolutely floored me. And I thought, well, because we spoke about it, because we broke the taboo, and it wasn't even meant to be taboo, we'd never spoken about it. It opened the door and enabled people to ask for help or to just tell somebody. And, it, you know, that's the first thing we can do as churches, say, this, yeah, we're allowed to talk about this, because it just changes things. And, you know, it was an extraordinary thing. And we were then able to go on and support those women. But speaking up about it really, really matters.
That's so helpful. If I mean, let's just say, you know, I was a proper minister in a church and someone came to me and said they were a victim of domestic abuse, what would be the thing that would be most helpful for me to do in that circumstance? How do I resource them? How do I help them? Obviously, you know, validate them and believe them and take it seriously. I'm taking that as a given, but
that's a given.
I'm sure it isn't. Even as I said that, I thought it probably isn't. Sorry.
Well, I think that is the number one thing, is validate and, you know, is to validate them and believe them, because the great fear is that that isn't what will happen. And it is often what doesn't happen, which of course means people just go back and don't tell anybody again. So that's the first thing. And then, I mean, what I would say is, prior to that, go and get trained. At Restored, we run online training all the time. We have a brilliant resource, a book you can download it as a PDF, A Church Guide to Responding to Domestic Abuse. So we have some great tools to equip you first, because you're always better educated. And that would have a much longer answer than I'll give you.
Yeah.
But fundamentally, what you can then do is to help them find answers. So even if you don't find answers, and here's the thing, unless you've worked in the domestic abuse sector, you're not an expert. Help access expertise, whether it's saying, we can use a safe computer in our building and we'll start working this out together. You know, we can sit and Google and go to the domestic abuse helpline. We can contact local services. all of those things are really helpful. And I think it's really helpful to know that we go, you know, unless there's a really high physical danger risk at the moment, you can afford to go at the pace of somebody, you know, you need to go at somebody's pace, which can be really slow. Because sometimes they just need to tell somebody and then think and then not do anything. And then, but if you are able to create a safe space where they can find more information and they can start to find their options.
That's interesting.
That's a really helpful thing to do.
And then, so Restored exists to help resource churches to enable to respond better to this. So if people are on a pastoral team or church leadership of some sort, then they can come to you. How would they do that? What's the website address?
Restored-uk.org is us. Yeah. And so you can access training, resources, or you can find out about becoming a beacon church, which is a network of churches we're developing around the country who choose to really purposely partner with us and become hubs in their local communities for survivors and, you know, connecting in with local services, but fundamentally being a really safe space with almost like a kite mark of being a restored beacon. So we know, because the other thing that we host is an online community for predominantly, I mean, anyone can join, but it's predominantly Christian women who have been through domestic abuse. And we know that we've got nearly 750 women in that network now, which is a lot. And a significant proportion of those had to leave their church when they left their abuser. For one reason or another, for a whole spectrum of reasons. But for them to find a church where they feel safe to walk back through the door is a really big deal. And so our beacons exist for two reasons. And one is for those women. So we can say, no, this church gets it. They're not going to tell you to go back. They're not going to tell you to pray harder. They won't tell you to submit. They won't, like, all of that, like, you'll understand. But it's also for the church to be the light in the darkness that it's meant to be in its community. Yeah. Be a safe place for anybody to come and find help. So but that's the way.
And you say they won't tell you to submit. I mean, it does make me mindful of that. There is some particularly toxic theology in some churches that they probably need to get away from. Certainly one of my experiences way back in a former church, many churches ago, many lives ago for me, but was of exactly what you said. A very respected male authority figure in the church who, you know, certainly had all the right theology, was an abuser. And I think it's that thing about sometimes it's the people you suspect the least. You know, it's just a horrible thing, isn't it? But actually, you know, I just want to emphasize the first thing is to believe it and not to think, oh, no, that can't be true, because I know this person, they're a good, godly Christian.
I think one of the things we've learned from working with our survivors is if you're somebody walked in off the street and were to say, you know, this is happening at home, you probably get great support. If you are part of the congregation, it gets harder.
Interesting.
But if your perpetrator has a position within the church of even just like small group leader, worship leader, youth leader, let alone minister, you are in a whole nother ball game of being likely to get support, because it's that psychological thing of if somebody comes and tells us they've been in a terrible car crash, we know how to empathize with that. That's easy. But if they come and tell us they've been in an interpersonal trauma of abuse, which when you know both sides, now you're being asked to choose, and it's like it's psychologically difficult. So part of what we ask of churches, and we've got a whole page committed to this, is in the booklet about it, if people want to join up, is are you prepared? Are you prepared to believe this of the worst, you know, of in your church? Are you prepared for you to discover that it isn't just not a shepherd? He's actually, you know, he's a wolf in shepherd's clothing, not let alone sheep's clothing. Because until you are. And that's a horrible thing to have to ask of people, but it's really, really important. And we've seen it in so many other formats, really. I mean, abuse is abuse on one level.
Sure. Okay. Well, I sort of didn't want to ask you this question, but now you said one in four, I feel like I do need to say, if someone is listening to this podcast and they're in a relationship where there is domestic abuse and they don't know what to do, or they're frightened of not being believed and they're not, you know, they don't want to rock the boat, what would be your advice to them?
Well, I would always say that you can contact us at Restored and you will always find someone who will listen and believe you. And that's really important to know. And if you need to do that and do it somewhere safe to make sure that nobody knows you've done it, go and use the library, go and use somebody, a friend, anything to contact us. And somebody will get back to you. But the one thing I would say is it's amazing who we can talk to. And if you feel like there is somebody that would listen or might listen, it's the first step to freedom is speaking it out and letting somebody know. It doesn't mean you've got to make any big frightening decisions yet, but do find someone. It can be Restored, it could be somebody else that you know, and just begin the
Thanks.
conversation. And it doesn't have to be I'm being domestically abused. It can be I'm not terribly happy. Like, we can start with small language. We can start with small language and build up. And I think, sometimes the mountain can just seem too big, so we just need a little bit at a time.
Great, thank you. And is there anything else you'd like to say to our listeners, all 17 of them?
I do hope so.
They are known as the 17 for reasons I won't go into now, but they are beautiful people. But is there anything else you'd like to say to our listeners?
I think, the thing that I get reminded of again in the Bible, as I've spent, probably more time than is healthy studying some of these really horrible passages about terrible things that happen to women, is as I've reflected on them and what are they doing in the Bible, it is this concept that God sees and he knows and he cares. And so, and he, so if that's you who is in a position where you feel like you're stuck in a position you can't tell anybody about, God sees and he knows and he cares. Like, that's just something to always hold on to, that you're
Thank
not alone,
you.
but also that he calls his people to act that out. And so the rest of us, we need to be those ears and eyes and that care that goes along with it, so that we don't walk on by on the other side of the road. It's really important.
That's fantastic. Thank you. Rebecca, I'm so grateful for you coming on the podcast today and sharing not just your own story, but sharing about the amazing work of Restored. Like you say, if people want to get in touch, they can do it through the website, restored-uk, did you say,
Org. Yeah.
dot org. So that's a great signpost. So bless you. Thank you. As you continue on your journey of grief, we are with you and you're in our hearts. Thank you for the amazing work you do and just for spending time with us today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
So that was Joe talking to Becca Legg. I mean, fascinating stuff in there and quite sobering, to say the least.
Yeah, it
You know,
is.
the statistics
Oh
I
man.
found absolutely appalling, really.
Horrific. Absolutely horrific. One in four. One in four women. It's just, And what an amazing job she does. And I have to say, sometimes you talk to people and you just have a sense, oh, you're a really wonderful person doing an amazing job here. And she certainly has a stature to her and a faith that is very real and accessible. And it was a joy to talk with her, actually. So thank you so much, Becca, if you're listening to this.
I mean, I found a lot of fascinating stuff in there. Interestingly, I've also preached on Judges 19. I suspect that Becca and I are probably the only people in the UK who have ever preached on Judges 19, because it's such a horrific thing. And it sort of reflects on what we've been saying in recent podcasts about looking for the victim, because that was how I approached that topic, was to say, who am I in this story? And I realised that the person I am in the story is the person staying inside and comfortable and pushing the sort of woman out to get punished, as it were. You know, I'm the one who is living the comfortable life while others suffer. And it was incredibly sort of powerful realization. It's such a difficult passage, but I think there are ways to approach these things that can really, open our eyes to what's going on. I mean, one of the things I looked at when I preached on it was how in many parts of the world, women are victims of war and violence, women and children particularly.
Always, yeah.
And that was particularly happening in I think the DRC, Democratic Republic of Congo, because there's sort of fighting going on there around a mineral called coltan, which is used in mobile phones. And so the idea of, we've got a mobile phone, we have a mobile phone, but we're not really, aware of the price that is being paid
No, we're not.
elsewhere by the vulnerable, so that we can use our mobile phone. I don't want to make anyone feel and guilty about it. I just think you need to open your eyes to it. That's all. But anyway, I just found the interview really helpful and but also, you know, really, really sobering.
Yeah, and it could have gone on. I mean, there were so many more questions I wanted to ask her. Like that, like sometimes are there victims that don't even realise they're victims? I wonder sometimes if it just gets so normalised, that you think, well, this is just reality, this is just normal.
Yeah,
and you know, if anyone is listening, God forbid, you know, remember, love is patient, love is kind. So, people who tell you they love you, you should at least be able to know by their patience and kindness towards you, I always think.
And I think it's fitting because it sort of follows a trend of so much we've been talking about from Danielle Strickland's interview on patriarchy, because you know, what a lot of what she was talking about is that how can you believe against somebody who's got official position in the church? Particularly a man who's got that. And how the attitudes that are ingrained in you result in action. They will inevitably result in action. So if you've got those attitudes to start with, Jesus says what's comes out of us that makes us unclean, not what goes in. It's the way that our attitudes work out in our society that will express it. So, yeah, I think it fits in that trajectory of things we've been talking about there.
Yeah. And obviously, if you've got any comments to make about the interview or anything you'd like to share with us, please do send an email to joe@midfaithcrisis.org. Love to hear from you. Might get a slight delay in the response this coming week or two, but I will certainly get back to you. Thank you.
And we will put the links to the Restored organisation on the website and in the show notes as well to this episode if you need those. So, Thank you so much for listening as ever. That's very kind of you. And we should let you go, Joe, and get back onto the beach.
I'm off for a siesta, actually.
Oh, are you?
Yeah. I'm definitely going to have a rest.
Oh, that's lovely. Well, I do hope you don't get sunburned.
Thank you.